Welcome to Freedom Cast, a podcast dedicated to interviewing star icons and entrepreneurs who have encouraged others to become more healthy and active. My name is Ashton, and it's my pleasure to host you as we take another trip through the fitness industry. It's entertaining and informative, and I hope it makes fitness more exciting and special to you in your own fitness journey. Freedom Cast is supported by Freedom Fitness Equipment in Charlotte, North Carolina. Freedom Fitness Equipment serves the health and fitness community nationwide, from free weights and strength equipment for home gyms and studios to cardio and conditioning equipment for commercial spaces. Check them out at freedomfitnessequipment.com. Let's get rolling with today's show. All righty. So we got Joe Corsi on the line. And welcome, Joe, to the podcast. Appreciate you coming on. Joe is hell strong. You've got over I think the last I checked on your profile was over a 2,100 pound total. Is that still accurate?
Yeah, I guess if you really, some powerlifters are like, no, you have to tell the right, the right number. No, yeah, 2,130 plus poverty bench squat or squat deadlifter, my forte, I suppose, but bench is coming along, but yeah, that's accurate.
Awesome. Is your, you mentioned poverty bench. Is that an arm length thing? Cause I've got gigantic arms and I can't bench worth crap.
You have that albatross wingspan. I don't know in particular exactly what's going on with bench. Bench was taking a pretty good turnaround, I would say, two preps ago. Yeah. And then I just think it's just the accumulation of managing fatigue or going past that threshold for how much I squat, which can impede things. And then just trying to find the right amount of volume and intensity for that bench. It's taking a turnaround. Matter of fact, in like 5 hours, I have my last heavy bench single for prep. So we'll see what happens. But I hit 501 in competition, but had some hiccups along the way for the next competitions. Just, I don't know. It's just one of those anomalies that we have to figure out, but that's what off season works for, to figure that stuff out.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Are you, I'm curious what the off season looks like for you. Are you completely backing off the numbers and then just titrating everything back up as you get towards competition, or are you still staying relatively heavy?
I mean, that can vary between each individual. In regards to me, we kind of go towards conditioning, building work capacity.
Okay.
time frame of training. So it's currently right now where I just hit my single for squat on Saturday and my deadlift single the previous week, and then I have a bench single this week with a taper effect for squat and deadlift. So we're kind of combining those lifts this week together to kind of get that done, increase a little bit of volume for that. But also not to the point where I'm overreaching and I'm still getting the work in, still use adequate recovery.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, the intensity is high right now. So once that's done, we'll be in meat deload. Once I'm done with competing, we'll get into a... So my coach is Chris Bridgeford, and he goes for... kind of like that conditioning volume. It depends, because the conditioning and volume phase that we were in last prep was different than how we're going to be in, or how we were in this prep.
Right.
So it's just one of those up in the air things of how he wants to approach things, because it just depends on like how I'm responding to the meat prep training. So he's tracking all that data and how I respond to the meat setting. So It could vary, you know, in terms of sets and reps. I couldn't tell you. That's just dependent on how he wants to approach the next phase. But it's not going to be like, all right, 1 week we're going to do a heavy max single. Not typically.
Okay.
Very rarely should that be in a program, if at all, unless you're trying to retest one rep maxes after not testing out for a while. Yep. To kind of have a baseline. But no, I'm not sure. It's just one of those... magic tricks that Chris pulls out of the buddy out of the hat and be like, here's what we're doing. But no, it's all structure. He has a plan and I learned pretty well. So I'm excited to see that. But right now the mindset's focused on this meet in 2 weeks. And then we'll talk about looking like a bodybuilder, looking pretty decent for the summer.
Got to get the aesthetics.
Yeah. Got to get the aesthetics.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Must have been a delay. Go ahead.
I am curious. I just ask you another question on that point, because I do like talking about training a little bit before I ask you about your background. But do you, and I know you're being coached, but is your philosophy more main movement, less accessory, because the accessory don't build the mains, or are you, where do you stand on that?
So I have a bodybuilding background. So when I first started training, I trained for maybe 1 or 2 years in just general weightlifting, you know, the typical high school kid that walks in, does curls for the girls, tries for the guys. And then I got away from that. I was an upper body bro. Like all I did was train upper body, gym, tan, laundry, Jersey Shore every Wednesday,
yes,
on MTV or Thursday. And then I got into the bodybuilding and I realized, oh shit, you got to train legs for that. So I got into bodybuilding and I did the typical still bro split, yeah, upper body, arms, you know, hamstrings on one day, just like, what the hell? So when I got out of the bodybuilding phase, I got into powerlifting, and that's when I started, that's why I started incorporating better splits on how I'm training and stuff. Accessories are a huge proponent. They're the most overlooked proponent in programming, in my opinion. Fortunately for this time period, younger generation, especially on social media, tend to see more what's out there. So 10 years ago, a fraction of powerlifting scene was relatively unknown. Now a mass majority of it is known amongst 14, 15, 16, and even higher year olds. And they just see the main lifts posted and nothing else. And so they assume it's just compound movements and that's it. When in fact, no, it's like when you look at John Hack and you see him squatting high sevens, deadlifting 2,000 pounds and then benching half a ton, like people are like, oh, that's all he does. Like, no, he does not. He doesn't put in that fluff work that makes the meat and potatoes work. And that's a huge proponent. So my philosophy is focus on the main movements, of course, because that's ultimately, if you're in those strength sports, you're going to focus on the movements that are going to benefit you in the competition, or what you're going to see in competition. But put a majority of your time and emphasis on the accessories to help build up those weaknesses, to help build up that muscle. Some people can argue that the more muscle you have, the stronger you can get it. But that could be relative, because some people can look like string beans and deadlift the same weight as somebody who looks like an IFBB pro bodybuilder.
Yeah.
So you have that variable too. Nice. So to answer your question, and you'll know that I'm a run on sentence sometimes, accessories are a huge component, but fine tune that nice balance, because it's all going to be relative to the individual.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. The personalized training aspect I think is overlooked too, because, and this is what I try to hammer home with this podcast with multiple people who've got really good advice like yourself. But if you're not training personalized, you're probably not hitting whatever potential you could be at, and therefore not training efficiently. So it's better to have a coach if you can, but like personalizing whatever training block, even if it's a program that you found online, I'm sure you could attest to that. You know, you're going to have better results. It sounds like, because you can just tailor it to your body type.
You can tailor it. The pendulum swings. So if you're relatively new to the sport or just in general strength training, that pendulum can swing to the side where you can get away with the basics and still garner a lot of results from that. And then as that grandfather clock, dial swings to the other side, you have elite athletes, people of high caliber that have already done that, but need specific movements, specific intensities, specific stimulus to further their results or get better. So that's where the individualized programming comes in for people.
Yep.
So that I think anybody can, so that's why like programs like 5-3-1, mm-hmm. The cube method, stuff like that. A lot of people gravitate towards those programs because one, it's easy to follow, and two, it's very basic, very easy to understand, very easy to apply. And I think a lot of people can get results off of that if they are beginner to intermediate level,
yeah.
But someone like myself, probably not, because trial and error over the years I've been doing this has shown me what works and what doesn't. But I should say that what has not worked in the past is starting to become something that's working now.
Interesting. Yeah.
Case in point, Chris has found we found a nice point to increase my squat, my meat and potato lift. It's my favorite lift, while also increasing my deadlift at the same time. Uh-huh. Whereas there's too much emphasis on my squat, uh-huh. and my deadlift would take a hiatus, and which we wouldn't show up at the meet and be like, oh, here, we'll start with this and see where it goes. Now it's like, no, we know exactly what to start with and what we're going to end with. Now it's just to get that stupid ass bench press up to up to par. It has cost me major totals because of that. I'm like, I'm strong. I know I am, but I just got to get that bench up. I'm a large guy. I shouldn't be benching what I'm benching. But hey, it's that trial and error, that work ethic. It keeps pushing you forward.
Yep. Okay. So let's go back to the beginning a little bit and just talk about your background and how you got started in powerlifting. I know you've got a multiple training programs under your belt, from bodybuilding and strongman to powerlifting. But how did you get into strength sports at all? And what was that progression like? And how'd you get into training and all that?
So I guess I'll start from the beginning and kind of work my way up. And hopefully I don't lose train of thought.
Oh, you're good. If you do, it's okay.
So I'm a huge sci-fi nerd and just, you know, comic book nerd and stuff like that. So I was heavily involved into, I mean, look at me.
Yes,
I don't
sir.
Know if you can see that,
but I love that Mandalorian
shirt. So, all I did was, you know, play Magic, play Yu-Gi-Oh, play all that stuff in high school, but I wasn't your typical, and I hope I don't offend anybody for these political times. I was a nerd, was a goofball, but I was a jack nerd. I was the person who would play with the guys who didn't shower for a week because they were too busy gaming. At the same time, I was also teaching the jocks how to lift heavy and properly. Wow. Because I can, you know, I can be on par with them. So I was kind of, I didn't have a clique, but I was just friendly to everybody and friends with everybody. So I got into it because my uncle, he competed in strongman a few times back in the 80s. And he was one of the best offensive tackles during that time of the state, you know, high school records, used to bench 405 type guys. And he was just jacked. And, you know, 6'3", 280 pounds, just solid muscle. So one day I was reenacting Dragon Ball Z figurines. And he's like, Joseph, we're going to Gold's Gym. I'm like, what? Gold's Gym? What's that? And I remember him taking me. And I remember my first movement he ever put me through was the lat pull down at 70 pounds. And I was a struggle bus. And I was sore as hell. And so my fuel after the workout was a huge bowl of Captain Crunch cereal. And I remember that day. That was back in 2007. Mm-hmm. And from there on, I was just like, okay, I like this. So I kept on working out with him. And eventually, you know, going from 135 pounds to about 170 during my, you know, sophomore, junior year, So when I discovered bodybuilding, realized that nutrition was the pivotal moment in, you know, me wanting to further this. And so my weights teacher was very supportive and gave me all the information that I needed. And so I went from 179 pounds, 180 pounds to 215 just by eating better.
Nice.
And discovering Cell Tech from Muscle Tech and started taking that religiously. So I started getting stronger and getting bigger. And then eventually a few years after that, after just general strength training, I decided to do bodybuilding, and I did my first competition, got like fourth place. It was horrible. I think the only person that I beat was like a 6-year-old man. And it was kind of embarrassing, but it was an experience. But I did get sponsored by a NAMBF pro. So he is a natural professional bodybuilder. I got sponsored by his team because he said I had a ton of potential. Because I had no idea how to water cut, I ate really clean, but I needed to time things correctly. So during that process, I started getting better, but then somebody egged me on to do the GNC, because I worked for GNC way back in the day. Mm-hmm. And we had a show of strength competition at the local YMCA. So I decided to try that out. And my friend, my mentor and future coach at the time, helped me out for prep. And at the time, I think I bench pressed 325 at, you know, still my bodybuilding phase, 325, never bench pressed, kind of stopped doing that stuff because I didn't want to hurt myself. But yeah, I was one of those people who stayed away from the compound movements at one point. I did a lot of accessory work with dumbbells and machines and cables. And I remember going to the deadlift. I deadlift 525. I was wearing basketball shoes. I was wearing sweatpants, some sort of fleece jacket. And I started taking my Gold's Gym knee wraps and started wrapping my knees. So I was ahead of the game at 22 years old, acting like I was a 6-year-old guy from the 80s, wrapping his knees for deadlift. Yes. So he's like, Joe, take that shit off. I'm like, really? And he's like, you don't need that. So I was like, okay. So I went up there and pulled it with horrendous form, and I got 525, but I ended up getting second place to obviously a lower weight class. To my frame of mind during that time, I was like, wait, I'm bigger and stronger. How come I lost? Didn't realize that they took weight classes in consideration, used a formula even during that time. So I got addicted to it, man. And I started experimenting with power building because I still love bodybuilding.
Yep.
I had no clue what powerlifting was still. I'd gotten to my first ever meet. It was an SPF body mini meets or something, Body by George, in some northern city in Georgia, where I was born in Georgia, Fort Stewart. Okay. And my dad's family lived there. So I lived there for a time, and I went to go do that. And obviously I got better, you know, pulled 660 and I benched 425, and it was our 415. It was really iffy too. I'm kind of surprised that they let it pass. So that was my experience with a formal competition that counted. And then we started talking more about doing a full power meet. So I did a full power meet, got into Florida's, before Florida became the mecca of powerlifting. I decided to there doesn't seem to be a lot of meets in Georgia. So I looked in Florida. So I took an Amtrak train for competitions. Yeah. Went to a little old, very, very old town called Ludowice.
Okay.
Ludowice. In the South, they pronounce it different, but you know, when you're from the Midwest, you pronounce it proper, right? So I took an Amtrak train, read my book, just chilled, whatever, got there. Some mutual people that I befriended at the competition picked me up, And I stayed with them for a couple of days while we went to go compete. Had a bomb ass time, loved it. Did my first full power. So I actually squatted, benched, and deadlifted.
Wow.
So my first full power, I hit 17.10 at 275.
What?
And I was able to win the meet. And at that time, I didn't know anybody. Like Dan Green, the Raw Unity, like all that stuff. Had no clue who the hell those people were. I just wanted to go in and try this out, see if I liked it. And I fell in love with it. And ever since then, it just was a steady stream of just, you know, kept on linear progressing and just keep going and climbing and climbing.
Real quick, how old were you at that 1700 mark?
So that was 2016 of February. Okay. And that, so it's 6 years ago, Jesus Christ. So I think I was like 23 or 24 at the time.
Damn. Oh my gosh.
So, and I guess it was a respectable total back then. I think the 2000 pound mark at that time was still like, oh, if you hit a 2K total, you're God.
Yeah.
Now it's just like people are coming out of the womb and fucking hitting 2000 pound totals. It's just like free candy for everybody, but it's still respectful because if you look at it, that's still below 1% of the powerlifting population. So I kept on, you know, getting better and better, hitting up the Florida scene, eventually moved to Florida. And I get, you know, started training around really, really good people. Better than me, because that's what I wanted. I needed people who are stronger than me. I couldn't train at my local gym because, you know, Fitspo chicks everywhere doing glute kickbacks doesn't really motivate you to hit heavy squat signals. So I made the choice to move, I trained at a friend's garage gym for quite a while. So it's kind of like a Rocky Balboa moment. I think, what was it? Rocky IV? Was it Rocky IV when he faced Ivan Drago?
I think that is.
So yeah, I envisioned that all my competition or, you know, my competitions, were training in state of the art facilities while I'm training in this, you know, 8x10 garage with minimal accessories and showing up at competitions and, you know, embodying that Dorian Yates mentality. So I like that. Eventually, I met my wife, Sam, and she was into powerlifting too. And she's obviously still active in the scene. She's, you know, currently prepping for a meet in May. Wow. And met her, and she got me acquainted with one of the best gyms in the world, American Barbell Club. And that's based in Gainesville, Florida. They just recently got a new location. It's a very, very good, good friend of mine, John Hollier, owns that. He started that when I kind of like started my first competition. So it kind of coincided.
Nice.
So I started training there, and then that's where I met the top athletes. So a friend, Pete, Jared Skinner, Bill, like, you don't know these people, but these people, we would have a crew that would meet and get better and stronger, and we compete with each other and compete at some of the best meet. One of the best meets that Florida had, called Battle of the Bay at the time. And that's where I hit my first 2K total, was in Battle of the Bay. And eventually that kind of opened up doors to where I remember one time in the kitchen back in 2016, I told my coach at the time, I said, as I was watching Boss of Bosses 3, I told him, I want to do that. That's the ultimate goal. I want to go head to head against Pete Rubish and Dan Green and Jordan Wong and all those people. And he said, let's do it. And I got the invite, competed against them. It was phenomenal. It was eye opener. And that kind of just set the precedent to just like, okay, you're not just some local, you know, corn fed from Nebraska kid that's just, you know, can be naturally strong and get better. You're not just some person. You're, you know, mingling with the top athletes in the world and competing against them and, you know, showing where you stand. And that mentality was kind of like gung ho. So sorry, I'm talking too much. I got to catch my breath. I'm a heavyweight. You got to give me some slack here.
I feel that. I really do.
So, well, I'm 5 pounds away from my 275 class, so I'm in good standing, but I still feel like I'm a 308. So that mentality during the time, I guess it can come with, you know, just over the years, you kind of learn and mature better and kind of open up the avenues to better thinking, better planning. Mm-hmm. And I think back when I was younger, I can get away with a lot of stuff like training frequency, maybe slipping up on the program intentionally and maxing out because you felt good, right? Yeah. Now at this time, it's so precise and streamlined that I can't bring myself. And there are multiple occasions where, you know, people were maxing out, you're going to competitions where people were maxing out, or I'd get invites from friends to come and do like a max deadlift session or a deadlift party or whatever. And I would have to turn it down just because I was in this mindset of like right now, you know, being 30 years old and, you know, I don't consider myself the best by any means, by any long shot. Can I go head to head with some of the best guys in the world? You bet your ass I can. Anybody could. If they put their mind to it, they put the work ethic, you can. So that mindset switched to that, to where training has to be set in stone and you can't deviate from it. Once in a while you can, just to have fun, because you don't want it to be a second job. But right now my mindset is, if I'm training for a meet, any numbers I hit is going to be listed on the program. Mm-hmm. And whatever I hit at the meet, that's listed what we want to do. And then afterwards, if I have a long off season, then sure, we can, you know, have some fun here and there to see like what's up. But it's not going to be like, if I go and max out, it's not going to be like, oh, that's the new basis that we have to go for. It's just to have fun. But right now my mindset's just, I have a goal I have to set. Let me set that first, and then we can have fun afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so here we are, 2 weeks out, less than 2 weeks out from the Ghost Clash. And that's, not only is that meet going to be stacked full of some of the best, if not the best in the world, it's going to be stacked with so many close friends, so many people I've interacted and they've reciprocated that favor on social media. So some people you can't see unless you see them at meets and you mm-hmm. stay in contact or support them. So I'm going to make it my duty to go up to people that I follow. They followed me for quite a while. They've support in a sense of like commenting and liking and sharing. You know what I mean? We live in a tech age where that's shaking somebody's hand is an equivalent to liking somebody, commenting or sharing your post. Yep. So I know I'm not going to be the guy who's just like, awesome job. Great. You look great on social media. And then you see me at the meet, I'm just like, you're just like looking at them and like, should I say hi? Like, that's, come on. We're all adults here. You can go up and say hi and shake hands and support. They're humans just like we are, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
That's my run-on sentence.
I love it. Ghost Clash is going to be where again?
Miami, Florida.
In Miami, Florida. Okay.
Yeah. So Alex Osolar is the owner of the Ghost Gym in Miami. Mm-hmm. That is one of the best gyms I've ever been to. That gym is so stacked with ghosts. I mean, it's the Ghost Gym. It'd be kind of weird to have like Elite FTS equipment in there called the Ghost Gym, but everything is ghost equipment and it's just super awesome. Nice environment. It's beautiful. I'm not familiar with the area, but it's located in kind of like a commerce business type esque area. Yep. So there's a lot of traffic there. But it's very awesome. The venue is going to be somewhere different from the Ghost Gym. But Alex, I've done Alex's meet. I did the hybrid when he was with hybrid. I did the hybrid showdown SummerSlam. I'm sorry. The first SummerSlam in 2019. And he hosted that meet. He did that meet and he holds some phenomenal meets. Like that guy knows business and he knows like what the people want, and he'll make sure it's ran really, really well. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Excellent. Yeah, I've heard Go Strong Equipment is amazing. I can't imagine what that gym looks like. It's got to be absolutely decked out.
Oh, it is. You have probably the most expensive jack known to man, deadlift jack. It's probably like 18 inches. It looks like some sort of Mass Effect weapon you would get for meleeing. It's insane. Price tag is hefty for something like that. But I understand it's not just steel, and painted over it. It's like the designs are intricate. Mm-hmm. It holds up. I mean, why else would federations, all sorts of federations use their equipment? They're starting to replace their other companies' equipments with Go Strong equipment. So
yeah,
there has to be a reason behind it.
The aesthetic is beautiful on those things. By the way, I'm loving the nerd references you're throwing out. Keep them coming.
We could talk all day about nerd stuff, bro. I like that stuff. It's my pastime for sure.
It was, I'm gonna run back around to that here in just a second. I just wanted to mention, because I say poverty bench, and I just want people on the podcast listening to understand that Joe has a 501 bench, which is more than most. That I got that right, right? 501. Okay, yeah, 501. Which is more than most people are, like double or triple what most people are pushing. So that's not, in my opinion, poverty, but I understand from a total standpoint where you're coming from. I just want people to understand, like, you're pushing massive amounts of weight. So
yeah, I appreciate that. And for somebody of my size, 500 pounds would, in most cases, would be like first attempts for some people. But yeah, like that, it sucked because we're on track to match that PR and then go up a little bit, which would have put my total for the the pro surge that I did in October would have ended with a 2170, 2180 total. Wow. And because that second and third attempt got, you know, I didn't get it, it knocked my total down significantly. So
okay,
it's like every time I look at that sore thumb of a total, in my personal opinion, it's just like, damn it, I know I'm stronger than that. Look at all my other lifts, damn it. You know I'm strong, right?
I totally understand. I've got, yeah, I mean, that's my weakest. Like I said, that's my weakest lift. I'm not even pushing close to the numbers you are, but that's definitely my weakest lift, and my deadlift is my strongest. So you mentioned, so being a nerd in powerlifting, funny enough, I don't know if you've noticed this, there are a lot of really nerdy powerlifters, and they're all over the freaking place.
Yeah.
So
Daniel being one of them. He's, I don't know how many times he asked me, do you have Apex? Do you have Apex? I'm like, no, I've heard of Apex, and I finally downloaded it because I was playing with my brother. Because my brother is like semi-pro, so he plays ranked matches, and he's not full pro because he's, you know, a college student. He's 21, and he has, you know, he's pursuing his engineering stuff. Wow. But him and I play all the time. So we play Halo Infinite, we play Battlefield 1, we play Apex on the PC, because I play PC, is a little bit odd. It's difficult.
Yep.
I used to be the console player. So obviously aim assist, it what definitely benefits you in terms of tracking the enemy player. Mm-hmm. But I've gotten so good at PC that I don't need the aim assist in particular. But for Apex, there's just so many variables to learn, like shielding up, how to like cancel slide, of course, in that regard. Like when I play Warzone, for example, I know all that shit by heart, like cancel slide, shielding up, all that stuff, because everybody played it, but it's so broke right now that I don't even have it installed anymore. So it's just too many cheaters, too many issues going on. But Battlefield 1 is my forte. Any Halos. We just recently beat all the Halos on Legendary, every single one, except Infinite, because there's no co-op. So I'll have to tackle that on Legendary myself, but that's my favorite series by far. My favorite genre, the Halo series.
Yeah, you're for real. I don't think I could even touch that on the RPG side. The what is it? I'm a huge fan of, I don't know if you've heard of any of these titles, Red Alert, Tiberian Sun, Command and Conquer series by Westwood.
Command and Conquer, I've heard.
Okay.
Are those, it's not like StarCraft and Warcraft.
It is actually, yeah, it's RTS. Yeah.
Okay, good. Age of Empires is one of my favorites.
Yes.
In regards to that. The reason being is because you are literally taking a history lesson, but also commanding thousands of units and,
I know,
and killing each other. So it's fun. Age of Empires 4 recently came out. That looks like it would be really fun to play. But knowing myself, I'd want to start from the first one and work my way up, even though there really isn't any correlation with Age of Empires 3 with Age of Empires 4,
yeah,
because the time periods are set differently. But I'm a big fan of Age of Empires 1, just simply because you're looking at the Sumerians, the Phoenicians, you're looking at the Greeks and the Romans. I'm a huge fan of Greek history. Mm. I mean, I have tattoos of Socrates, Parthenon, Ares, Pegasus, Greek sayings. Like, that's, I love that shit. Awesome. Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Yes.
My favorite Assassin's Creed title ever. So, I like the history that it shows. I love how games are starting, like when it comes to historical games or games set in historical time periods like that, have the player learn, because when you have a 12 to 16 year old kid, you know, high off of Pepsi Cola and just sugar overload, and they're like, what's that building with the cylinder, you know, columns and stuff that looks weird. You're like, yeah, that's the Parthenon kid. If you go up to that billboard right there, it'll tell you the whole history. And you're like, I just want to kill bounty hunters, though. I'm like, you could still do that, but you can go around Greece and actually look at historical locations. Wow. On Assassin's Creed. And in game, it'll show you what it looks like currently and then what it theoretically looks like based off of artist renditions. So what you see in game during that time period is kind of an idea of what it would have looked like during during the Greek time period. Yeah.
Oh, that's really neat.
So that's a little in-game history for that.
I love that, because I was recently, I just kind of tested it out. There's a buddy of mine who has the, and this is not in the same genre necessarily, flight simulation, but they use the Google Map overlays, and they had certain points of interest that were really well depicted. And it's eerie how good the graphic quality on that stuff is and how they've been able to re-represent in a 3D environment. The landscape is beautiful too. You'd be shooting out over, like Scotland or Sweden, seeing the sunset, you know, at whatever time of the day with the mountains in the background. Gorgeous. You mentioned Greek history and Roman history. I was actually so classically educated, so I very much enjoy that historical portion of what you're talking about. There's not a lot of people that are into that, I think.
They should be, because it's part of our history.
Yeah.
It's currently embedded in our history. A lot of Greek and Roman qualities are the foundation of like how America is today. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think people should look at that and honestly look at the Romans for where they were before, you know, the Roman Empire fell.
Yeah.
Progressively over time. We're kind of in that period of time right now.
Yep.
Not trying to get too political, but you know, when the Roman Empire or emperors were trying to figure out a way to pay for the economy and trying to keep it afloat, and try to keep the citizens distracted, what would they have? They would have extravagant parties. They would have gladiator arenas being built to distract the masses. And what do we have? We have football stadiums that are the equivalent to that in the football players being gladiators, and of course, propaganda. Like, that stuff existed back in the day, not modernized by any means, but to the extent for face value, it was the same thing.
Yep.
And over time it fell. So people think that the Roman Empire just fell overnight, but now it just slowly started splintering away.
Yep.
Eventually it became nothing.
Yeah. It's really scary. A few books I've read that kind of mirror the, and again, not to get too political, but the, when I read, have you ever read through some Atlas Shrugged, Ayn Rand?
I wanted to. I see that documentary on Amazon Prime on a consistent basis, but I think it's more of a kind of an industrial revolution, modernized take on it.
Yeah.
But Atlas, yeah, I've heard of Atlas Shrugged, what you're saying.
It was interesting just talking about Roman history and the fall of the Roman Empire, the destruction of the economy of a nation that has decided to take its best workers and essentially socialize them in order to boost what dwindling kind of resources they have. And it was really scary to read through that. And this was, 10 years ago, and I'm still all the pieces clicking into place and that narrative. And I'm like, this is happening here. And this is happening here. And this is, oh shit.
Right.
So
it makes you wonder if, when people say history repeats itself.
Yeah.
If there's some sort of paradox and some sort of space time, quantum physics shit,
I know. Right. Yeah.
It sets the precedence because I know in physics or theoretical physics, I think it's like time should be linear forward. There's no way to go back in the past. Everything has to be present or future time. It kind of makes you wonder if like things of the past actually trickle in somehow. We don't know everything. So, some scientists could be listening to this like, what's this guy's name? We got to find him and take him out. He knows too much.
Black hole loops and time horizons and the whole nine, that stuff is crazy, man.
Black hole, the information from the black hole, black holes have been a timepiece in scientific literature because not many people knew. Like, first we didn't even know what the hell a black hole looked like.
Yep.
And then just recently we have a solid image of what a black hole looks like, and now the information paradox in the black hole, where what happens to information once it goes into it, they're starting to pick up data, excreted data, because, gases get expelled from and hit that asterisk disk, or I think that's what it's called.
Okay.
So the disk that goes around the black hole. Gotcha. A good representation of that would be watching Interstellar.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
That's probably one of the most accurate depictions of a black hole.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that they use an actual physicist to render that image. And because of that, it actually, scientific papers were written off of that because it was unprecedented depicting a black hole like that, because technically speaking, from their data and calculations, they are able to, like I said, make a rendition of what a black hole would theoretically look like based off of calculations.
Wow.
And so scientific papers were made off of that once the movie was created because it was so good.
That is wild. I had no idea about that. Interesting. So, so now my question is, being that a lot of powerlifters are into the nerdy, geeky side of things, is, like, how did they even get into, so now my, like, I'm figuring out like how they got into powerlifting in the first place. Like, I know I was bullied as a child and I was a nerd. Like, did that happen to you? And then was any of that a motivation for lifting, or was it I know you said like a lot of it was just naturally you like doing it, but was there any of that going on as well?
I think a lot of people can identify with that, being bullied. I think most people, I'm only speaking for myself, but yeah. I think some people can agree that they wanted to find an outlet. Like when you talk about people who are into, the nerdy stuff or the geeky stuff, right?
Yep.
When you think about that, what are some characters that you play or read about that have this masculine personality, this or either the quiet type or the eccentric type, that have this, you know, physical stature, has this prowess about them, whether it be mentally or physically, right, that they somehow identify with? A good representation of that would be the Master Chief in Halo.
Yeah.
You don't see his face. Briefly, you do in some of the clips. You only see his eyes in physical descriptions in the older Halo books. But people look at that. You have a fucking 6'9", 275-pound, without armor, Spartan soldier, who is just beyond anything you can imagine. And he rarely talks. And if he does, it's concise. And whenever he talks, there's meaning behind it, even if it's only a few words. But you never see his face. So when people look at characters like that, they put themselves into their shoes or they identify it. And that's probably one of the reasons why the Chief's face was never unmasked, because people can put themselves into that suit, into that armor. So when I'm trying to say, like, when I find an outlet, perhaps I wanted to power up like a Super Saiyan back in the day. And I figured, like, well, Goku's jacked as hell. I'm going to start working out. Was I bullied? I wasn't bullied into the sense where it caused me mental issues.
Yeah.
I would say it kind of opened up my self-awareness a bit more, maybe more introverted, maybe more observational, because I realized that people talk too much and don't think. And so I figured, well, I don't want to be put on the burner. People thought I was quiet, reserved, but I always reassured them, even to this day, when we go out or something and I'm not talkative. And some people say, like, man, you're quiet. I'm like, no, I'm just watching, you know, because I don't want to speak out of context or speak out of tune. I want to observe the situation first and kind of get an understanding. Because what if I say something that offends you in this political time period we're in? It seems like you breathe and people drop to the ground and, you know, go into seizures because, oh my God, he breathed on me, you know. But I think that, sorry, this is a run-on sentence, but I think that a lot of people can identify with, you know, comic book superheroes, video game heroes, maybe their dad, maybe their mom, maybe a family member or a friend, or it could be as simple as one day you decided to go on the shitter and read a Arnold Muscle Mag and you're like, holy shit, Arnold looks, he's just perfect. Yep. I want to look like that.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So yep. I think it's just different case by case. Sure. So for me, I just projected of wanting to, you know, look like Arnold. That's why I got into bodybuilding, emulated his poses, did all that stuff. And then eventually I figured that this is kind of being redundant, and I wanted to, the way to be tested and judged, and it solely being on you. Because in bodybuilding, you can look great. 99 out of 100 people could say you look phenomenal, but those 5-6 judges can be like, nah, fifth place. You're like, what? Whereas in powerlifting, you pick that bar up and you don't get it up. It's not the judge's fault. The judges determine whether you get the lift or not. It's on you if you do or not.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I switched over to that, just because. But yeah, to answer that question, I think it just case by case.
I gotcha. Yep. The inspiration from a physically gifted character. I remember thinking that exact same way too. It didn't launch me into weightlifting necessarily, but like definitely wanting to emulate those kind of characters. I remember watching a few anime series as well. Now you mentioned Goku. Back to your comment about bodybuilding and switching off of that after powerlifting, are you just going on hypertrophy cycles in the off season? You're not going straight bodybuilding
and then back to
powerlifting. Okay.
We keep the compounds. We could switch out the compounds variations. So it doesn't have to be just straight bar. It could be Buffalo bar, cambered bar, SSB, It could be wagon wheels, deficit. You're still touching a barbell with the accessories like dumbbell work, cable work, stuff like that. That's where you would build that work capacity in a sense of stimulating the muscle groups, the smaller muscle groups. And when I talk about building work capacity in the main compound movements, you would have a higher than normal volume workload for that. So right now, like I have a heavy bench single today. Excuse me. My back downs might be a couple sets of two, a couple sets of three, and then it'll be a couple sets of two or three.
Okay.
And then the accessories will be kind of a higher rates of perceived exertion, also known as RP. So kind of based on how I feel, I can take a certain weight and utilize that. In bodybuilding, it's, you know, higher volume, medium intensity of weights, maybe to higher intensity. So intensity can be interchangeable. And so some people would be like, that's intense. Well, intense in what way? Well, there's a lot of sets and reps. Okay. Understandable. Or my, for example, high intensity for a weight, because of my heavy bench, mm-hmm. that intensity was high because it was a heavy single. So, but regarding bodybuilding and powerlifting, interchangeable, people call it power building. So I mean, if you look in the off season, that you could consider it power building.
Okay.
When you get into meat prep, I would consider it powerlifting based.
Right.
Because you're trying to work on the specifics.
Yeah.
You're trying to work on what you see on the platform.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. You mentioned that. I got confused because I was like, I don't think I've ever heard of somebody bodybuilding in the off season and doing powerlifting in the main. That would be impressive, but also probably impossible just because it's so very different in terms of.
Not impossible.
Really?
No, it's not impossible anymore because you have a couple people that come to mind. Blanca Vilach, she's a nutrition coach to one of my clients. She's based in Florida. She's like one of those. I haven't looked at her records. I think she's like top 10 in the world at 148, she's up there. Like. Yeah. I've competed with her at Battle of the Bay because she's based in Florida, so we all know each other. She recently got her pro card in bodybuilding, and she's in powerlifting again. Another well-known female, Hunter Henderson, she got her IFBB pro card too.
Wow.
And she recently got second overall at the hybrid meet like a few weeks ago.
Was Hunter on the Massonomics podcast? I think she was.
So I know this may sound kind of weird, but though I am in the sport and I've been in the sport for long periods of time, I don't necessarily follow too much of the podcast.
Okay. I was just curious.
Or what's kind of going on, but she could have been. Massonomics is those guys are funny in what they make. I think they make those shorts that are like, they break the bank or something. They like $40 pair of shorts.
Yes. Shout out to Massonomics and their lift shorts, which are untenably high in cost.
But you know what? They're going off a model there. It's like, I think they're making one. I think they can get away with it because what they're well known. And from what I understand, they make some pretty good quality material.
They do.
And two, I think it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek joke of like, yeah, people are charging out the ass for shirts and shorts and stuff. It's like a tank top and some companies run $30. I'm like, a tank top, a female tank top, really? $30. So I think they make a joke there, but they're doing really good at that. That's great marketing because people will buy it because they make fun of it. They're like, yeah, these shorts will break your bank, but you'll love it.
They're phenomenal. I'm a religious listener. So, and by the way, anybody listening to this, the Massonomics podcast with Tommy and Tanner is, they've got a lot of awesome personalities on there, but, they used to always be that way especially when they're first starting out, but their humor is it's so good. I enjoy guys that don't take themselves seriously and could still have a good time, particularly within the lifting world. 'Cause a lot of it comes down to, you know, and they go off the wall with as far as the topics are concerned. That's why I like having a free form conversation. But yeah, they're riot. So yeah, you should see if you can get on there.
That'd be cool. One of my friends, Jonathan Oldham, he's sponsored by him.
Yes.
By
him.
Yes. John, he's fun. He's a fun guy. He's a character. and he's a firefighter too.
Yep.
So, and I know a lot of people know that because he posts a lot about it, but that's just, I like that shit. I like the fact that he can go have fun, do what he loves to enjoy or does what he loves, and work a very physically, mentally, and time consuming profession and still do really good at what he does.
Yeah. It's impressive. Anybody that's working a full time and also powerlifting and doing probably half a dozen other things like yourself. I mean, are you working a 9-to-5 or is powerlifting your main now?
You know, so not a lot of people know what I do.
Okay.
And that's probably one of the reasons why, another reason why I want to talk about that because, a lot of people just know the face value of a lifter because of their lifting. They don't know what they do. A good example would be John. John, he's like some sort of scientist. He works a 9-to-5. From what I understand, one of my friends, TJ. Yeah, John Hack.
Okay, okay.
And just people look at him and be like, you know, him going to raves or concerts, like EDM concerts, him traveling, posting really good content. And people don't realize that he has a full-time job from what I understand from based off of one of my friends who's close friends with him.
Yeah.
And people don't know that. Like for me, I own a side business that does coaching and programming called Simplified Training Solutions.
Yep.
So that is my full-time gig, but I also am the general manager for Southside Strength and Conditioning here in Brentwood, Tennessee.
Nice.
I'm also full-time in school for criminal justice administration and psychology.
How are you doing this?
Please don't remind me because for some reason it's working and I want to keep it working.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So my days are long, you know, start in the morning time, get things organized. My wife helps me out with planning accordingly to making sure that things are structured out. And my wife is finishing up her master's degree as well. And she works a 9-to-5 and does powerlifting. So like I said, a lot of people just see what you see on social media and don't realize that people have full-time jobs, you know, whether it be remote or whether it be physically demanding. And that just, when you find somebody who is just a phenomenal lifter, and you find out that, like, for example, Dan Bell, great guy. And he's like a mechanical engineer or an engineer. He like works on like really big trucks, like semis and stuff. I think I could be wrong. It's a physically demanding job. And the guy can go in during the weekend and squat over a grand, no problem. You know, and I like that blue collar work ethic type mentality, or anybody who is able to still enjoy the sport / hobby, however you want to swing it, while also balancing family life and work life and making yourself better in all regards.
Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah. The discipline required to even for you to work that many jobs. I think that really points to your success or not in that particular sport, like the fact that there's so much other stuff going on and you having to balance that and being able to effectively balance that. That's not something everybody can do. And that's phenomenal.
No. And there's other people that, you know, decide to pick up the sport and pursue it full time. Mm-hmm. And whether that be, you know, leaving their job or going down to part-time or finding something that's less demanding. Yep. That's their goal. And you have to respect that because you have no idea what their life is. You have no idea. You know their goals because they post it on social media, but you don't know the ins and outs of it, like behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And so I think regardless of what you do, as long as you're pursuing your goals and you're getting better at it and you're enjoying it still, that's all that matters in that regard, in that sense. You can be a COO of a Fortune 500 company and be the top 1% in the sport that you do. That's respectable. Or you can be a grade school teacher, okay, remote grade school teacher, whatever, mm-hmm. and still be the 1% in the world.
Yeah.
And I respect that regardless, because you're pursuing something, but you still have other duties to perform too.
Absolutely. Joe, I want to tell people where they can find you and where they can get coached by you. So where are you on the social media interwebs?
So on Instagram, which is my main app that I use for business and just, you know, social media, my personal page is the_traveling_warrior. And to give a little bit of background of that is, remember when we talked about the Amtrak trains to Florida from Georgia?
Yeah.
Flying, driving, trains, traveling all over the United States to compete. That's the reason why I have that name, the Traveling Warrior.
Okay.
Because, you know, warrior mentality, right?
Yep.
And you're traveling. I know, yep. Simple.
I like it.
And then for my business page, it's Simplified Training Solutions, all one word. And you can, you'll see a Spartan soldier with the STS logo. It's kind of a white logo for that business page. And feel free, like if anybody's, you know, inquiring for, you know, what programs, how I, you know, do training, or people are interested in coaching, feel free to reach out. I do serious inquiries only. So I try to keep my business nice and tight with people who are really into this. Mm-hmm. And I'm not in it for the money, because I can easily go in and find a multitude of clients and get them underneath me, but I'm looking for people who are dedicated and have the right mindset pursuing their goals, so we can work together to make it better.
Nice. You'll have a better quality of clientele too. So that's awesome. Well, Joe, I really appreciate you coming on. Daniel was definitely right about you. You're so down to earth. I really appreciate the discussion. It's been phenomenal. I love being able to relate on the nerd side too. So thanks for that.
Yeah, no problem, dude. I'm surprised that half the podcast wasn't talking about, you know, nerdy stuff. I'm all about that. Yeah, because, you know, sometime during today, once I get all my duties done, I'm going to be logging on with my brother and playing some Apex or Battlefield and stuff like that. It's fun. I actually got one of my best friends and training partners to get a PC, and he's hooked. He's like, bro, you need to download, because he's in the same program as me.
Yeah.
And he's like, bro, you need to download this police simulator. And I'm like, what's that? And he's like, you're literally a cop and you do everything you can. I think they use like an Unreal Engine.
Yeah.
Something of that regard.
Okay.
And you police reports, crime scene investigation, patrol. You start off as a rookie, you can work your way up. You can interview people, and during the interview process, sometimes those people are high, and you can actually have a side comment and be like, ma'am, sir, or have you been smoking lately? Like, it's pretty in depth. I'm like, I think I'm going to drop the $25 to get that game, because it sounds pretty cool.
Wow. That's intense. Yeah. I had no idea that was out there.
So anybody out there who's a PC or thinking about getting a PC, do it, because you have so many options. It's hard. It's a learning curve. Console, it's just put the button on, or push the button, power button on, and load up the game, and that's it. Does the rest for you. But with the PC, you have to really be intricate about that.
It's the console of superior men, in my opinion. I am so horribly biased, because I built two desktops myself. And so, you know, I just, the processing power is nuts. So it's way better than you can get out of a laptop or any kind of console. But Microsoft Xbox is basically just a glorified dumbed down PC anyway. So yeah, I'm right there with you.
Yeah. Yes, I agree.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Joe. We'll definitely have to have you back on, and I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I appreciate it, dude. And thank you for your time. And hopefully when people, you know, listen to this podcast, they pick up some nice tidbits, and maybe it could be life-changing, maybe not, but yeah. I guess we'll go from there. But until next time, right?
Yes, sir. Thank you for listening.
please give FreedomCast a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It would mean a lot to our business. Plus, it's fun to read y'all's reviews. See you next time.